Over at AIPAC, the leaders of the Israel lobby in Washington, D.C., they're constantly proclaiming unrivaled influence on Capitol Hill, and they should be proud. The NRA and AARP's efforts make them look like puppy dogs in comparison to the campaigns of intimidation regularly run by the neoconservatives and Israel firsters against their political enemies. But the Israel lobby does not remain unopposed. At the Council for the National Interest, they put America first, insisting on an end to the empire's unjustified support for Israel's aggression against its neighbors and those whose land it occupies, and pushing back against the lobby's determined campaign in favor of U.S. attacks against Israel's enemies. CNI also does groundbreaking work on the trouble with evangelical Christian Zionism and neocon-engineered Islamophobia and drumming up support for this costly and counterproductive policy. Please help support the efforts of the Council for the National Interest to create a peaceful, pro-American foreign policy. Just go to councilforthenationalinterest.org and click Donate under About Us at the top of the page. And thanks.
All right, Jill. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. And yesterday, technology and its glitches got the best of us and cut off the end of the Marcy Wheeler interview. We never got to finish. So, and then there's huge breaking news right along Marcy Wheeler lines to discuss as well. So I'm very happy to welcome Marcy Wheeler, the Empty Wheel, as she's known in the blogosphere, emptywheel.net. Back to the show. Welcome back, Marcy. How are you?
Good. Good to be back.
Thank you very much for joining us again. Okay, so first things first, let's pick up where we left off yesterday. I asked you, so what effect is the Manning prosecution, et cetera, having on journalism, on journalists, and on their sources? And you had something to say about that.
If I remember correctly, I was saying that I think there's a number of really good investigative journalists, some of whom just aren't doing much anymore, and if they are, they're not doing much on national security, the others of which I think just have lost the degree to which they are getting sanctioned leaks, and therefore they're not as critical. They're not thinking critically anymore, and as a result we're getting narratives that make no sense about really fundamental stories. And that's unfortunate.
Can you give us some examples of what you're thinking of there?
Well, I mean, like the drone stories. The administration has been on a year-long dog and pony show about how they're conducting drone stories, and those started right after it broke that that they were engaging in signature strikes in Yemen. And immediately after that, there was a bunch of stories about how, in fact, you know, there was a lot of control and they knew who they were targeting, and it clearly contradicted what we had just learned. And yet that narrative has subsisted all the way until today, all the way until 2 months ago when Jonathan Landy, published and NBC kind of republished what he had published 2 months ago, mm-hmm. that the data show that's not true. And so, I mean, it's clear that Jonathan Landy, who of course is famous for having alternative sources who aren't the top White House officials, it's clear that there are still that people out there leaking information. This Glenn Greenwald scoop also shows that. But the narrative, the Obama administration, I think, has succeeded at presenting unquestioned narratives as well as anyone has since the Iraq War buildup. I think we're seeing the same kind of unquestioning obedience to this White House narrative, and that's really troubling.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a little bit understandable on the it's understandable all the way around, I guess. If I put myself in the journalist's shoes or in the leaker's shoes in government, I mean, they're risking much more than before. But I guess it's also even true just at the Chuck Todd level, right, which I use him as the example of the joke journalists, the anchors, you know, not real reporters, but the White House press corps types. I keep reading their complaints that the Obama administration just hardly won't give them any access whatsoever. And so they have to just have the world's worst suck-up contest to see if they can get, 2 seconds, see if they can get one answer about anything. And so instead of rebelling against that and really fighting back and standing together and refusing to go along with it and just demanding better access, they all engage in the suck-up contest.
Right, and I made this point the other day. You hear a lot of journalists saying we need a better shield law, we need to tweak Brandenburg, which is the Supreme Court precedent that governs press protecting their sources. You almost never hear journalists say, we have to, you know, dramatically limit the Espionage Act so it's not used to investigate Americans trying to inform Americans. We need to overturn this administration and the Bush administration's interpretation of Navy versus Egan. Again, this is another Supreme Court precedent, because the governments, both administrations, have been using it to claim that the executive branch has unlimited ability to determine what is secret and what isn't secret. And both of those laws are actually far more important than the journalist shield law in playing these information games. They, you know, they also are what allow the government to engage in sanction leaks, knowing they're never going to be called on it. And that's notable, because I think if we were able to fix the Espionage Act, if we were able to limit the interpretation of Navy versus Egan, then I think you would have the government couldn't use information for political gain the way they're using it, or at least not to the same extent.
Mm. Yeah, and the pushback from the press has been really minimal, even on the AP story where they're criminalizing, they're calling a reporter, oh no, that was the Fox one, where they're calling the reporter an unindicted co-conspirator, basically, in the case of investigating that leak. And along with the AP's story, which broke just before it, I've noticed on TV, these people, the TV news anchors, they're so used to siding with the government that even when they cover these stories, they have to laugh and mock themselves for caring about it and say, well, you know, we only care because we're the media and it's about us. And so, oh, gee, I guess we're going to actually spend 30 seconds on this today. Whereas if this was about anybody else, of course, we wouldn't care because it's just our benevolent overlords taking care of us.
Yeah. I mean
what a strange attitude to see, you know, when their profession, their most important profession, is under attack like this.
Right. Well, what they're,
So now, back to the Manning thing for a minute here, too. Can you tell us what anybody learned from Adrian Lamo, the rat's testimony, or any of the other developments from the trial itself? Anything important people need to know?
Yeah, the biggest important, I mean, Lamo's was just what we already knew. I think that the most interesting development, which was yesterday after we got cut off, Manning's supervisor in Iraq actually had really good things to say about him. She said he was very good at analysis. She said that he would be encouraged to do the kind of surfing that he was doing, that he that he was supposed to download the documents he's being accused of downloading illegally. So even the government's own witnesses are, I think, questioning their case to a significant extent.
So, wait, is that testimony contradicting his guilty plea then on that particular case of
whether
he was supposed to download that or not?
No, it supports his limited guilty plea. It just, I mean, what he basically said is he accessed some of this information. The government says no, he illegally accessed it. And what his supervisor said yesterday was no, in fact, he had reason to download all of it. So,
I see. That wasn't one of the things he had pleaded guilty to. The only things he had pleaded guilty to was taking the documents from there.
Taking the documents without authorization. Yeah, I mean, so he pled to lesser charges on just about all the counts save one. And so that's what we're seeing is, I think we're actually seeing that, and we'll see whether whether they present a case. But, I think the government is, there is reason to believe that the evidence presented, at least thus far, actually supports Manning's version of what he did more than the government's version of what he did.
All right. And then, so let's change subjects here, and there's a lot of them to cover. I almost wanted to start with the Google order first. Do you know about that one? They had been resisting the government's demands that they turn over, I believe, vast tracts of data, and they've lost, at least on a pretty high level this week, no?
Yeah.
Can you explain a little better to me?
I don't know. I mean, it's just another case of national security letters, the government requiring data in secret. And even in a circuit and with a judge who had already said that they couldn't get this information, judges are still upholding national security letters. But I think, I mean, I think we should actually jump ahead to the Verizon thing.
Sure,
because
go ahead.
Because, I mean, so what happened is Glenn Greenwald at The Guardian published a what's called a Section 215 order, which you and I have talked about a bajillion times. So your readers are way ahead of where everyone else is on this, your listeners. And what it showed is that the government, the FBI, came to the FISA court and said, we want all of Verizon Network Business Services metadata for 3 months. And the FISA court said, great, here you go. And deliver the data starting Monday or starting whenever to the NSA. And so what it shows is that claims that the government is doing dragnet service, in fact, are true and have long been true. And that the government is doing this via these orders. This one actually gets reviewed by the FISA court. The reason I jumped ahead is because national security letters get reviewed by other judges, normal Article III judges. But over and over again, what we're seeing is the government is successfully collecting massive amounts of data on people who are completely innocent. And that's what's important about this Verizon order, is that it collects all Verizon Business Services customers, all of them.
Right. And, okay, there's also even kind of a loophole thing where they're calling it business, like it's just it's like a takeoff on the Patriot Act or the Know Your Customer provisions of financial institutions have a lower threshold for turning over data. But this isn't about Verizon dealing with other businesses. This is about all of their customers.
Right. It's a third-party order. So what? And again, this is how. Same with the national security letters. This is how the government is collecting all this information. Is they ask a private company for data they have on you, and the private company is gagged from telling you, and therefore you can't challenge the order.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they're doing it over and over and over again with all sorts of kinds of data.
So what does this mean for the standing to sue that every Verizon customer in America is holding in their hand right now? Anything?
Well, that's what I argued this morning. The governments, both Holder and the White House and some members of Congress, are saying, oh, we can't discuss this in secret. And one of the things, you look at this order and, you know, even people who were trying to figure out, who assumed that it was tied to a specific investigation rather than just regularly collected dragnet, they had no clue who they were targeting, because you couldn't have a clue who they're targeting because everyone's being collected. So in other words, these orders, it belies the claim that these needed to be secret in the first place, because if you're collecting from everybody, there is no plausible argument you can make that revealing that you're collecting from everybody will tip off the terrorist.
Right.
So, and I argued that the only reason they've been keeping it secret and the only reason they're going to refuse to acknowledge this, even though they all but have, is because they want to prevent somebody from getting standing. In other words, they're hoping that some judge will still rule that this does not give a Verizon Business Service customer standing to sue because Verizon is sharing its information with the government. And that itself ought to tell you that the government doesn't think this is legal, because they have since 2004, since before, they have made every effort they could do to make sure these counterterrorism programs could never be reviewed in court. They did it. I mean, this comes on the heels of the Clapper versus Amnesty decision at the Supreme Court, where, you know, a couple of justices said, oh, I think you're speculating that as a lawyer who represents terrorists, they might be wiretapping your phones, and therefore they were thrown out. I think Verizon Business customers are going to have a better chance of proving that they've got standing. But people really need to understand that the trick the government has used consistently and over and over and over again is to deny people a legal review of these programs by keeping things secret and therefore preventing any person from getting standing to be able to sue and challenge it in court.
Right. And challenge it in court means correct challenge, not just the behavior, but the FISA Amendments Act that legalizes this. Because isn't this the illegal part of the illegal Bush program that the Democrats legalized in 2008, including
then-Senator
Obama?
It goes back to 2006. I actually think, I'm going to write a post, but I think that that this application of the section of Section 215 was birthed in a secret meeting between Robert Mueller and Dick Cheney on March 26, 2004. It goes back that far. The members of Congress who say they've known about it say that they've known about it since 2006. And what happened was the New York Times had its big scoop in December 15th, actually, 2005. That was the day before Congress was set to pass the Patriot renewal, the first renewal of the Patriot Act. And there was actually a filibuster, one of the few filibusters that, you know, there was a filibuster of it. And so the administration had to put off passage extension of the Patriot Act or the renewal, the 4-year renewal of the Patriot Act until March of 2006. And in the interim, they tweaked the language pertaining to Section 215. And we have to assume, and there's some IG reports that clearly indicate it, and there have been hints by people testifying before Congress that clearly indicate it, that since that time and probably before, they have been using Section 215 to do this kind of massive collection. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it comes out of the illegal program. It's a part of making it legal. But that, I mean, it goes back 7 years,
right.
Really.
Now, so, and then it does it go without saying, or we should go ahead and stop and say that if they're doing this to Verizon, this is the same thing goes for every other telecom, right?
I think that's, let's assume that until they tell us differently for once, you know?
And now, Greenwald, in his piece today at The Guardian, or yesterday's piece, I should say, at The Guardian, he refers to an article that came out in USA Today in 2006, that referred to apparently everybody except Verizon on this, whatever. I was just wondering what exactly is new. I think you said the congressman said that they learned about it at least in 2006. What exactly is new about this other than he's got the FISA document that proves it?
Well, that's a big thing.
I mean, that is a big thing. But this isn't a separate and distinct extra project. This is the same project that we're talking about.
Well, just as an example, back in 2012 when Benny, and I forget his first name, but when the former NSA, really top-level NSA person, was saying that the government was collecting all of this data, Hank Johnson asked Keith Alexander, who heads the NSA, about it in a hearing in March of 2012. And he said, no, the NSA doesn't do that. And very tellingly, he said, if it's domestic, the FBI has to do that. And I did a post then. You and I even talked about it. I did a post then saying what Alexander was doing was giving a non-denial denial that served and was reported as such by a bunch of credulous journalists that kind of allay fears that the government is doing massive dragnet collection. But if you looked at his language, he was basically saying, oh, the FBI does it. What we know from this, from what Glenn published, is that the FBI provides the explanation for it, and then the data goes right into NSA anyway. The order came from the NSA. The FBI applied for the order. It was granted to the FBI, but the order told Verizon to deliver the data to NSA. So one of the things it reveals is how they're getting around certain restrictions on the NSA, and they're basically turning the FBI into a front.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us who track this very closely have been saying for a long time, look, there's a huge amount of circumstantial evidence they're doing this, and people who don't want to believe the government is doing this kind of dragnet spying have responded by saying, oh, you're being a conspiracy theorist. And that, you know, those same people, and some very good lawyers this morning are going, I had no idea that the relevant to standard meant dragnet surveillance. They're now rethinking the counter arguments they've made against us supposed conspiracy theorists for the last 5 years because, you know, it's there in print that this isn't in fact what they've been doing. So I think that there are people, who will finally be concerned, who for years have been dismissing this as a possibility.
Mm. Well, and then there's a, like we were talking about with the FISA Amendments Act, there's a bipartisan consensus for this on Capitol Hill that it doesn't matter what the Constitution says. What matters is we're taking good care of you. That's what Dianne Feinstein said, I think, this morning or yesterday, that this is about protecting us from terrorists. So Shut your trap.
Right. I mean, and people should know, when Dianne Feinstein says that, especially if you guys are California residents, you should call her and say, if that's true, if this is so unquestionable, why did you work so hard to keep it secret, both last year when the FISA Amendments Act was passed and in 2011? Because she was the leader in keeping this stuff secret. If it's so defensible, if it's so valuable, then there is no reason to keep it secret. And Dianne Feinstein has been crucial to keeping it secret.
Mm. Well, on the other hand, too, though, everybody knows this, and in fact, I think we've all assumed this since the 1980s or something. It's like the Judas Priest song, the eye in the sky, and they're watching everything and tapping every phone. They built the National Security Agency hand in hand with AT&T, etc., built the entire telecommunications infrastructure of the planet Earth in the first place, I mean, since the end of the Second World War. So, of course, they could tap every signal on Earth that they want to tap. That's their job. So to think that they're not doing this, to me, is the crazy theory. Whether it's legal or not, whether they can use it against you in court later or that kind of thing is sort of out of the question. But I'm always amazed by these stories that that's all they're doing, really? I would have thought that that was 20 years ago.
Right, but that's you and I. I mean, honestly, I think if you've been following closely, it seems very common sense. But even today, people are saying this must be illegal because the relevant two standard doesn't allow it. And yet, you know, I keep pointing them to congressional debates going back to 2006 that make it very clear. I mean, in 2006, 2009, 2011, certain members of Congress tried to make Section 215 only apply to if you had a specific connection to a terrorist. So in other words, they couldn't do Dragnet. They had to say, I need to collect these business records because this person goes to the mosque with this known terrorist. And it was defeated every single time, in part with the leadership of Dianne Feinstein, but she wasn't the only one. And so, you know, at that point, it becomes crystal clear that they are interpreting relevant to very broadly. And yet none of the people covering or few of the people covering those debates actually wanted to describe it as such. But it has been clear. It's just nobody, you know, everybody wants to avoid making trouble, I think.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the people with the political power are the people who aren't worried about it ever happening to them, too. And so,
well, the funniest
and I'm,
thing,
you know,
actually,
among the population.
No. The funniest thing this morning is in the Appropriations Committee with Eric Holder, somebody, and it might even have been Barbara Mikulski, which is funny because, you know, she represents the National Security Agency, so generally she's the world's biggest wiretapping fan because that's her constituent and probably, you know, her most important one. But they were like, wait a second, if you're grabbing everything, and Verizon Business Services actually provides services to the government, so it provides a lot of the services for the people who work for the federal government in D.C. They're like, they said, these senators all of a sudden are concerned, and they said, wait a second, if you're collecting everything, that means you're also collecting members of Congress and Supreme Court justices, right? And you know, Holder didn't really answer, and they're like, wait a second, that's a separation of powers issue. And so all of a sudden, Congress has met the separation of powers they've done nothing to defend for years. It's neat.
They're so horrible, them congressmen and senators. And they don't even know how bad that looks. They're like, what? You mean this abuse could apply to us, not only our constituents that we pretend to serve?
Right,
well,
that's
goodness.
Exactly what they're arguing. Yeah.
Yeah, what about the separation of their power from us? To mind our own business and live in our own house and communicate and freely associate with who we want without having the national government looking over our shoulder, for crying out loud.
Well, and importantly, in the White House talking points, which are internally contradictory and ridiculous, they say all three branches of the government have approved this. And that is a fiction that needs to be busted with this exposure. Because, and that's something Congress has pushed and is pushing with the drone court, is that they are claiming that the secret court that rubber stamps everything, that doesn't allow any antagonistic representation, much less given the third party doctrine, meaning that Verizon is the person involved here rather than, you know, all their customers. Mm-hmm. They're pretending that's a real court. that, you know, and it's Congress that has sustained the fiction that the FISA court is a real court. And they want to keep throwing stuff into that court, which is not a real court. And that's one of the lessons that needs to come out of this, is that you cannot say that all three branches of the government have approved this if what we're doing is using this kangaroo court. And that's what it fundamentally amounts to.
Well, you know, that's always been confusing to me because, you know, like I know if you want to dispute a traffic ticket, that's not an Article III court at all. That is a Article II court, right? That's the executive branch. And the person might wear a little black robe, but it's pretend. It sort of has the impression of a judicial check, but it's not really. And then, so the FISA court at least used to be housed inside the Justice Department. And I think it's made up of members of the judiciary. But at that point, they're actually working for the executive branch. But then somebody told me, no, only sort of, kind of. And now they move down the street. And so maybe they're article... court rather than simply an Article II court. Can you clarify that?
They're in Article III. The members of the FISA court are picked by the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice. There have only ever been two democratically appointed FISA court judges, which is pretty funny. Although I have to say that the people John Roberts has picked up late, some of them have a good independent streak. So, you know, maybe he's getting worried about this rubber stamp court himself. But
so you're saying it is an Article III court, but it's still a rubber stamp court.
It's a rubber stamp court because the standards they are asked to rule on. I mean, for example, in the Section 215 order, what it says is, it is presumptively, you have to, in certain circumstances, you pretty much anything involving a foreign power, you have to presume that this warrant applies. So the rules in which the judges on that court are allowed to rule on are so narrow it makes them meaningless. If
right.
That makes sense. I mean, the judges are given next to zero discretion.
I see.
And so, but that's the way the law was written. And again, that comes back to Congress. You know, that now they're concerned about separation of powers. They made this court a kangaroo court. That's
right.
What they wanted, and they're responsible for it.
All right, everybody. That's Marcy Wheeler, the genius at emptywheel.net. Thank you, Marcy.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against our depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. Admit it, our public debate has been reduced to reading each other's bumper stickers. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. I made up most of them, and most of those when I was mad as hell about something. So if you hate war, empire, central banking, cops, Republicans, Democrats, gun grabbers, and status of all stripes, go to LibertyStickers.com, and there's a good chance you'll find just what you need for the back of your truck. Own a bookstore? Sell guns at the show? Get the wholesaler's deal. Buy any 100 stickers and they drop down in price to $1 a piece. You can spread the contempt and make a little money too. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the journal of the Future Freedom Foundation. Every month, Plumline Individualist editor Sheldon Richmond brings you important news and opinions on policy by heroic FFF President Jacob Hornberger, hard-hitting journalist columnist James Bovard, and others from the best of the libertarian movement. The Future of Freedom tackles the most important issues facing our country, from the bankrupt and insane welfare and regulatory states, to foreign wars and empire, the dismal state of our economy, and ongoing assaults on civil liberties. This society needs peace and freedom for prosperity to prevail. Subscribe to the Future of Freedom in print for just $25 a year or online for $15 a year at fff.org/subscribe. And hurry up, because this summer they'll be running my articles about the wars in Libya, Syria, and Somalia in the Future of Freedom too. That's fff.org/subscribe for the Future of Freedom. And tell them Scott sent you.
Oh man, I'm late.
Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up, turn around.
Whoa, easy.
Into the scanner. Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down. It's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? The Bill of Rights?
That's right. It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. They're for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey, guys, I got his laptop.